Six, starting a little bit late to make sure that we have our Zoom participants all wired up here. First off, are there any additions or deletions to the agenda from anyone on the board?
I have no additions.
Nope, I have none.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next agenda item, the Vermont Declaration of Inclusion. I'll let Ben introduce the speaker, and then we'll listen to the speaker via Zoom.
Sure, so Norman, first, can you hear us?
Yeah, I
can stick up there.
What's that? It's not working, but hold on. Heidi, can you come and help me? I don't know what's going on. I'm unmuted now. Chris, wait. I'm unmuted. Yeah, it did say it's muted. You know, I saw some sits. Okay.
Now, Norman, can you say something?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you be even louder, though?
Certainly. Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, I just want to say, as a resident of Roxbury, I support this inclusion project in part because it's important for us to be kind, fair, and understanding. And this inclusion document that's been signed by Governor Phil Scott, who is fully on board with it. And the reason why is not only is it important to be kind, fair, and understanding, it's important that we are known in the town of Roxbury as a town that is kind, fair, and understanding. Governor Scott is on board, and I'm on board because diversity is good for the economy. As you might know, many, many people are leaving the state, particularly young people. And the more friendly the state is, the better the economy of Vermont will be, which is really important, of course, for our future, and in particular for our resiliency in this age of climate change. So tolerance is good for business, and I certainly believe it's good for things way beyond business, but I just wanted to mention that. I'd like to introduce Norman. So Mr. Norman Fisher was a Cohen, I'm sorry. Sorry, Norman. Norman Cohen was an attorney in Rutland for 50 years and is now retired and is doing this inclusion work. And also, he had mentioned he's doing work for Habitat for Humanity, so it's keeping busy. And I'm going to pass this on to you, Norman. And please, if people ask questions, let me know if you can't hear them. And
thank you very much, Ben, and members of the Select Board. Certainly appreciate the time. You should know that your friend Ben has done an incredible job and an enormous amount of work just to get the voice part of this set up. Very, very impressed and appreciative. The Declaration of Inclusion started with two gentlemen from Rutland County, Bob Harnish and Al Wakefield. Actually, Bob's cousin, Ben Bannon, D-A-N-I-N, Bob Bannon, B-A-N-I-L-N, chair of the select board in Swanton, happened to call his cousin Bob, and the conversation mentioned that they had adopted a declaration of inclusion. I don't know where they got it from. I'm not sure why they did it. But I think it was a real step of foresight and leadership. Bob asked for a copy. He took it to the town of Pittsburgh, where he lives and has lived for many years. And Pittsburgh adopted it. The next thing he knew is somehow Brandon adopted it on its own without any encouragement from Bob. At that point, he thought maybe this thing had some potential. And he called his friend Al Wakefield, a longtime resident of Brooklyn and a very successful businessman in New York, who moved his family to Vermont. It's an interracial family. They thrived here in Dubai Restaurant and sold it back to the fellow who he bought it from, went back into the executive recruitment business. And all of us have known each other, but not like the last 2 years where 30 minutes doesn't go by where we're in touch And whether it's on this or just needling each other, it's become a 24/7 situation. Mom and I got together and decided again to map out a plan, and I encountered Bob on Tyler Val one day, and he told me about it, and I said, can I join? And so that's how this trio of people who have gotten now 96 towns in Vermont to adopt a declaration of inclusion. That's how we began. And it's really been an amazing experience. Can I ask the select board whether you have had a chance to read the declaration of inclusion?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. I won't waste your time. Have you had a chance to read the governor's proclamation of establishing Inclusion Week?
No. It doesn't ring a bell, but I read this document, the Declaration of Inclusion, prepared for government leaders. That pamphlet, if it's in there, I read it, but I was in between classes, so I may have missed a piece.
No, the answer is no. You're asking if we read the governor's declaration?
Well, have you read either the governor's declaration or the declaration establishing Inclusion Week?
The one that they sent, I've read.
So answer to your question, no.
Okay. Well, what happened, the history of it is that we got in touch with the governor's office and they had already started a program of equity and inclusion. In 2021, made a statement or a proclamation of inclusion and also established the second week in May in 2021 and 2022 as Inclusion Week, and we're hopeful he will do it again this year. His proclamation of inclusion, establishing Inclusion Week, is very poignant. I had not read it for a while. I read it today, and I'd like to read just a couple little phrases from it because it really states the concept, the purpose, the intention, and the goal much better than I could ever paraphrase it. Notwithstanding 50 years of practicing law and 7 or 8 years of journalism, I don't know who wrote this, but the guy on the radio got a medal. He says, whereas one must create a culture in which racial, ethnic, and other cultural disparities are openly acknowledged and addressed. The state must and will continue to address the challenges of achieving racial and ethnic equity across Vermont and to nurture the diverse society in which we want our youth to live and prosper. Vermont will continue to welcome all persons with myriad skills and traditions to work, live, and raise families here. He goes on to say, we must bring state and local leaders, agencies, and interested parties together across Vermont to examine existing law on hate crimes, evaluate systems of support, and look to increase civic participation among racially diverse populations. And then he goes on. And, you know, when a governor does something like this, there are lots of reasons. One is that Vermont is the whitest state in the nation. Secondly, we're having a real population drain, in fact, a crisis. Our population is aging. And by the way, all three of us are over 80 of this group. And we're losing our young people. We're recruiting, we're paying people to come here, et cetera, at one point. Maybe that program is still going. But when people come to Vermont these days, they come from areas that are diverse, and they may well be diverse as well. And this effort on our part isn't saying that you are not a welcoming community, because I'm sure you are. when he tells the public you are, it makes it a public statement. And it joins 96 other towns and cities doing so. The idea is, if we can get every town to do it, to bring people here. Last fall, CNBC did a study. The goal being to determine the best state in the nation to live in. And proudly, Vermont was named the best state. It did, however, list one of its shortcomings. Its major shortcoming was the lack of diversity. And that just hurts. It hurts in lots of different ways. It hurts our economy. It hurts our existing businesses who are looking for it to recruit people or a vacation mecca. But we want to be an everyday mecca too. And that's what this is really designed to do. So that's all I have to say. I'm happy to answer your questions. I hope you can hear me. I have a hearing loss, so you'll need to speak up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do a quick sweep of any quick questions for our presenter from our audience. Anyone? No? Okay, Ben.
Diversity doesn't only mean black people. It means all different kinds of people.
Right.
Which you do not like. You do not like people that have junk cars and junk. How stupid is that?
So can I
very much.
Actually, I would like to speak up about what Jerry and also David is saying in inclusion. But
sure. But why don't we could let him go.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll let you do that since you've been in
contact. Well, Norman, I don't know if you want to comment. I just, some stuff came up before in the meeting, preceding meeting to this, that might be relevant in terms of the inclusion conversation. Can you hear me, Norman?
I did not hear. No, I can't. Didn't I hear that gentleman well?
Yeah, so some things came up preceding in the meeting just with regard to inclusion. I want to say that there's a real concern that Roxbury hasn't been inclusive in terms of people without much financial means and feeling like the land is access is being limited. That was the conversation that went on in the preceding meeting. So I just wanted to publicly state that inclusion doesn't just mean diversity in terms of, you know, race, ethnicity, sexuality, and so on. Also, inclusion means making sure that the needs of everyone can be met in a way that sustains us as a diverse society. It doesn't just mean wealthy, we have the train going by, Norman. Doesn't just mean so-called wealthy, quote-unquote, flatlanders. Diversity is for all of us. So I think it's true, we do need to have a sophisticated conversation about what inclusion means that goes beyond what perhaps is implied in this inclusion document. Anyway, that's what I want to say, Norman. I didn't know if you had anything you want to say about that.
Yes, I assume the gentleman has not had a chance to look at the declaration. I want to stress to him and read the first paragraph. It's town of, assuming it's adopted, Roxbury, condemns racism and welcomes all persons, regardless of race, color, religion, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, age, disability, or socioeconomic status, and wants everyone to feel safe and welcome in our community. And I hope that, it's intended to be comprehensive and to deal with all groups of people who have been marginalized one way or the other over the history of our country. And there's always room to add a group. But the concept is equality and justice and equity in treatment for all people. And to welcome all people and learn from all people.
Is it time for a question?
If that was really the case, there'd be no junkyard ordinance. No pushing people around on their property.
Okay.
Think about that.
He doesn't, he's not been included on our ordinance, so.
Doesn't it, can I, is he hearing what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, good enough.
Okay. So why don't we swing this way?
So would you say that this is primarily an aspirational goal of tolerance?
Thank you.
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yeah.
The answer is, it is by adopting the Declaration of Inclusion, it is an aspirational statement. We also have a program of implementation, and that's the second step. It's fine to adopt it, but if you really mean it, there are steps to be taken to put the intention of this into practice and to start giving assurances and making people aware of how important diversity and inclusion is. It doesn't happen overnight. Some things can be done more easily and quickly, while others take more time. We do have a guide to implementation that we can provide and will provide. There are resources that will help communities move forward, and most of them are free. I will provide that as well. There's an Office of Racial Justice with a program called the IDEAL Program, and the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, which is 100% behind us, as is the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, which provides and maintains our website. But the Vermont League of Cities and Towns has an equity program and resources. One is the Municipal Toolkit, which is online, and another is a welcoming and engaging of community cohort program, which is a series of classes and meetings where you can improve on this. So passing it is the first step. It's an important step.
Okay, we have one question.
It was not so much of a question, but a comment. So when you listed all the types of diversity that there are, you said the words deal with. Now, as an immigrant in this country, I've been dealt with quite a lot. So it just kind of struck me as kind of one of those things that are written on paper that sound great, and then nothing happens, and nothing changes, because, well, it's America. And if you don't look like a white guy, well, sorry. Just from my own personal experience as an immigrant in this country, it really kind of rubbed me the wrong way when you said deal with. I don't like being dealt with, because I'm a person, just like you.
First of all, I apologize if I offend you, because that's the last thing I want to do. And remind me how I say dealt with so I can correct that and not use it again.
I think you listed all of the different diversity categories, and then you said dealt with. I mean, you could, it's recorded, right? So you can probably go backwards in the recording.
Oh, no,
it's not recorded. It's not recorded. Okay.
This is all
recorded.
Recorded
here. Yes.
For what it's worth, that terminology is not written in the Declaration of Inclusion.
That's great.
Yes,
I know. Yeah. It's just like, this is the presentation.
I understand what you're saying, and I apologize. Obviously, somebody promoting this kind of thing doesn't. But, you know, that's what implicit bias is. And that's one of the things we're trying to cure. And it just goes to show you, even someone like me who is, you know, is all in on this, has those inherent things that you have to overcome. And I apologize. I was trying to say, I don't remember exactly how I used it, but obviously it offended you. And it's just an example of, I guess, my humanity. I hope not my bigotry.
Yes. Okay.
You looking for comments?
Yes.
Or questions for the speaker?
Either or.
Okay.
Before we move on to the next piece.
Sure. Yep. I'll say something.
Yeah.
My name is Andre.
Speak up loud.
My name is Andre Salini. I live here in Roxbury, resident of Roxbury, and I read the declaration, and I think it's, I can find no reason why not to adopt it. I think I would be proud to live in a town that has adopted it. So I support the select board adopting it. I think it's good work to be doing, and I think the fact that people are here to talk about it is a great step.
Thank you, Andre. Yes, Ben?
I would just like to ask a question of folk. Do people have any concerns about the document, or, you know, it's just helpful. I think one aspect of these things is it's
sure.
a learning process, and it's a, you know, I find conflict interesting. I find when we have discussions that are challenging, we learn, hopefully, from those discussions. So I'm curious if someone maybe is hesitant to speak up or would like to speak up with concerns about the document.
Ben, isn't it just another feel-good declaration? It's not going to do anything.
So what Norman had just said is there's the aspirational aspect of the statement, and then there's the implementation process. It's worth reading. It's very clear that there's a process to support and sustain and increase inclusivity, and it's quite specific within that.
But it doesn't do anything.
Well,
we don't know yet.
We don't know. We have
to find out.
Yeah.
I should let other people in the room know my family is like the United Nations. My son-in-law is a black Muslim. I have a black nephew. I have my daughter-in-law is Asian. I have other Asian nephews and nieces. And we have South American and Latin Americans also in the family. So my family is inclusive.
Right. Which is great.
But I still think this is another one of those feel-good declaration that doesn't do anything.
Andre, Norman, would you like to answer that? Because I think it's a good question that Mary has.
I want to make sure I heard it correctly. I think the gentleman said that this appears to be a statement, it's a feel-good statement, but no further. And in a sense, you're correct, but it's the beginning. It is a statement. And
is it any different than God Bless America?
Well, it's a statement of aspirations to improve all the conditions that you have outlined. And the way to do it is through the implementation process. Nobody says that. And we don't certainly don't say this is a cure-all. It is not. It is the first step that puts the town, each town, hopefully on a path to improve these situations and be more conscious of them officially and take steps through various programs which are outlined in the guide to implementation, and so that these kinds of circumstances that both of you have spoken of are improved. It's not an overnight process. We don't suggest it is at all. It's a long process and a difficult process. If it wasn't difficult, it wasn't needed, this declaration wouldn't be needed. But it is just a first step that puts the town on record to say we're going to work on this and improve it. And hopefully with your support as people who have been subjected to this, you can help. A lot of communities select boards establish an equity committee that whose entire task is to work on improving the situation for everyone in the community. I don't know what goes on in your community, but you do. And if this equity committee is, if this is passed, and if the equity committee is established, there are many, many steps, from simple to complex, from posting certain things on websites and various offices to reviewing town policies and procedures and statutes and ordinances, to making sure your employee and employment and hiring practices and employee complaint practices are sensible, risk-free, and unbiased. I can give you a simple example of something that seems so
open up the bookmark.
For years. I serve on the planning commission, and we're charged with reviewing our subdivision regulations. So in reading them over carefully, I came across the following statement, which just startled me. It said, the owner of a property, comma, he shall do this, this, and this. So we changed it, of course. But that's a very simple little thing, but it means a lot. I mean, you know, how would you feel if you were a woman reading that ordinance now and coming forward with an application to provide a piece of property? I think it would be awesome. And that's just, and it wasn't, I bet that thing was a boilerplate adopted 50 years ago and nobody looked at sense to pick that up. That's a small but important example of how we can change, how you can change things, and how this is important to do that.
Excuse me, Norman, I think we're running out of time. My apologies to cut this shorter, but is the select board, did you guys want to make any concluding statements to Norman?
I just want to say thank you for coming. And discussing it and bringing it to our attention and giving people the opportunity to speak to it, and for all the work that you've done to put it together and for the work that you're doing for Vermont.
Well, thank you
very much. If you wish to have further discussions, I'm pleased to appear again if that would be of any assistance. And you're free to contact me with questions in between. And that's why email address, and it's also on our website. Thank you, and I hope it was helpful.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
I think given where we are in our timeline here and that this seems like it needs a lot further discussion and reflection, unless the board has any objections, I'd like to table any action on this at least until our next meeting on the 6th.
Sounds good.
I would agree with that.
Okay. I would encourage members of the community, if they have any further thoughts on this after we've heard this, to write written responses to us, submit them to us. Okay.
Submit them to Tammy.
To Tammy, excuse me, yes. To Tammy, who can send them on so that we can take that into account, as we'll probably put this on the agenda on the 6th to discuss for potential action. Moving on, we are now 25 minutes behind. So we're going to public comment. We have 15 minutes reserved for that. Do we have a show of hands of people that would like to talk about any agenda items or any other items during this time? One, two, I'll assume, let's say maybe five people. So let's start with 5 minutes and see where we get for each person. And we can swing from this direction this time. Heidi?
Yeah, Heidi Albright. I just wanted to say I support the Declaration of Inclusion, and I think it would be really great for our town. And yes, I agree, it is a feel-good statement, but it is the first step, and sometimes you just have to take the first step in order to make action. So that's all.
Okay. Dave?
Does it have to be about this?
No, any agenda item or any other items that you may want to talk to the board about?
Yeah, it's not about, well, it refers, anyway. What I have here is a document from 1780. Anyway, it's Silas Marner talking about, it's 8 years before the revolution. And he's talking about the fact that the Passions of Liberty printed here was, Passion of Liberty printed here was delivered to a Providence audience 8 years before the fateful Declaration of Independence. The tradition of dedicating a tree of liberty, which is why carpenters, some of them, put a tree in the corner of the peak of their building when they got the rafters up, which I didn't do, but I'm going to put one before I use the building. The tradition of dedicating a tree of liberty probably goes back to the ancient practice of Saxon clans assembling to hold their town meeting under some large tree. Under normal Norman rule since the 11th century, the Saxons would dedicate a tree of liberty to symbolize their former liberty. In any case, the practice was common in the American colonies before the struggle of independence. Silas Downer here uses the occasion to rehearse the Americans' position developing the recently concluded Stamp Act. He clearly states the basic formula for the American people are equal to the British and wherever. Anyway, down below, Jefferson made the statement, all men are created equal. Now, the last part. It only remains, this is what they said, it only remains to dedicate a tree of liberty. We do, therefore, in the name and behalf of all the true sons of liberty, America, Great Britain, Ireland, Corsica, or wherever they are dispersed throughout the world, dedicate and solemnly devote this tree to be a tree of liberty. May all our councils and deliberations under its venerable branches be guided by wisdom and directed to the support and maintenance of that liberty, which our renowned forefathers sought out and found under the trees in the wilderness. May it long flourish, and may the sons of liberty often repair here to confirm and strengthen each other when we look towards this sacred elm. May they be penetrated with a sense of their duty to themselves, their country, and their posterity. And may they, like the house of David, grow stronger and stronger, while our enemies, like the house of Saul, grow weaker and weaker. Now, all I got to say is one line in here, all men are created equal. Well, when you start messing with my life and start dictating what I can do with my life on my property, it ain't equal. And you better get that through your head. Okay, that's done. Second question. Do you have a copy of the amended complaint? Was it served yet, Tammy?
I don't.
No.
Wasn't served yet?
No.
Interesting. Wondered how long they'd wait.
Well, today's a holiday.
Well, yeah, I know that. They could have served it on Friday. That's when I gave it to them, but they didn't. Next question only. I'm curious to what your intentions will be. You've seen the complaint. The only thing that's different on the amended complaint is that I eliminated the temporary injunction and left the permanent injunction. I forgot about the fact that temporary is emergency injunction, not a debatable. So are you going to have your lawyer answer this? You have 21 days when it comes to you, I guess, to answer it. And are you going to have your lawyer answer it? And we're going to get a debate in court or what? Any ideas?
I don't think it's appropriate that the three of us answer that question here. without.
I haven't seen your complaint,
counsel.
So I wouldn't know.
You've seen the old one, it's the same thing. Just two words eliminated from it, temporary injunction.
And anything like that would go to our legal counsel, who would then advise us on how to respond and or act. And so
yeah.
I suppose when it does arrive at Tammy, we'll send it off to Jim, and
okay.
he'll let us know.
In executive session.
Yes. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Moving, Renee?
Yep. Renee Bouchard. So just following up from the last meeting, I had sent the link that had been sent to me by Workshare for VLCT, and just wondering if you guys had a chance to follow up on that.
Yep.
How'd you make up?
I have a scheduled meeting with them during my lunch break this Wednesday.
Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Any word on the safe route to school?
Nothing yet. I followed up and I've not heard back yet, so.
Thank you.
Yep.
Move any instruction? Anything? Okay. We will move on. Next on the agenda is consider approving the minutes of February 6th.
I move to approve the
minutes
February 6th
as
submitted.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Road commissioner's report.
Okay, roads are in good shape, but we are getting into mud season, so roads will be posted. And of course, we have more snow predicted. Equipment is all in good shape at the moment. And we'll move forward.
Okay. Any questions for Dave?
Nope.
Okay. Financial report. Anything of note, Tammy, besides what's there? Third installment of the school taxes and typical orders?
Typical stuff. A few tax overpayments to be submitted back to the taxpayer, and otherwise normal vehicle maintenance and monthly bills.
No add-ons?
No add-ons.
I would move to approve the orders.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That's 300. All right, moving on to unfinished business. Okay.
Oh, it was mentioned, it's in the orders.
Yep.
The third installment of the taxes is $217,473.
Should we move that separately?
It's no moving, it's
okay.
Just
that's
a mention.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay, so the next item has to do with unlicensed dogs. So this came up in our last meeting. A bit of a conundrum as to how we can get more effective compliance with this ordinance that already exists in our town. Yet we seem to have people who routinely either ignore it or forget about it. Full disclosure, I've been one of those people in the past where I've forgotten about it, but when noted, went down and paid. So we understand that happens. However, given the situation where some people are notified multiple times and do not respond to it, it's unlike other situations in our town where there maybe isn't a safety concern that you would have with unlicensed dogs who may not be vaccinated. So that's part of the function of these ordinances in our town and other towns. I ask that in our packet we get the ordinance that currently exists on the books, and we pose the question to our legal counsel as to what means and avenues and venues and vehicles we have to try to compel compliance. And he offered up a ordinance that he helped craft for some several other towns that he works with. So we have both in the packet, the one that's currently on the books and the one that he proposed, and thought it would be a good opportunity for us to discuss this as a board, as well as field any comments that the attendees might have about that. Certainly, when modifying or changing an ordinance, it's appropriate to do that and see how people feel about this. We did talk about it briefly at our last meeting, and whether or not we actually act on this today, I don't know, but probably not.
Well, our existing ordinance covers most of everything that's in here.
Yep.
The biggest thing, the penalties in this model ordinance are much higher than the existing penalties.
Can you read those things, the penalties?
The existing penalties for having a license dog, the first offense is written warning, the second offense is impoundment cost plus $25 penalty. And subsequent offenses are impoundment cost plus a $50 penalty. And in the model ordinance, first offense is $100 penalty, second offense $200, third offense $300, fourth offense $400, and fifth and subsequent offenses $500. And I do know the legislature, one of their committees has some dog work going on.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
What's that?
What do you mean by some dog laws?
I'm changing some laws dealing with dogs.
Got it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is there a rabies? Because I know you guys have done a free rabies clinic, and I'm wondering, to get a license, you need a rabies vaccine?
Yes.
And they have 1 year and 3 year vaccines, and is it possible that some people just haven't licensed because they haven't gotten their dog
vaccinated? And that's where the safety issue comes in.
I totally agree. I'm just curious if you did a rabies vaccine before the deadline for the license to be due, would you get more compliance?
We've always done the rabies clinic before the deadline.
And there wasn't anyone showing up this
week?
Well, it's not until March 25th.
That's in the clinic?
And the deadline's April 1st?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these are people from last year.
Okay, I just didn't have the timeline of it.
And I did get two licensed after last meeting.
Oh, great.
And one potential. So, yeah.
As an owner of a new dog, I just put the rabies clinic in my calendar.
And some of these are habituals.
Yeah, I was just curious. Because I might have been one of the people on that list last time, but I got our dog licensed.
I think, personally, the rabies is the reason they don't license the dog. But we hold a rabies clinic every year.
And they don't come?
Guess not.
Uh-huh.
It seemed to me that, in looking at them, that is one of the, there's several smaller variances, mostly having to deal with like the practical definitions of things and
mm-hmm.
how dogs are impounded and what happens to them, I think.
Right. This is kind of part of what I think the legislature is looking at, is trying to figure out how to have regional pounds and stuff for smaller towns.
That's it.
Does it say anything about a tax, the worrying of a tax or anything? In other words, let me say this. If I come to your land to serve a paper or whatever reason,
a tax,
and I perceive that your dog is going to kill me, okay,
yeah.
I have the right to kill it.
No.
Instantly. Yes,
right,
I do. Check the law. If I perceive that your dog is going to bite me, I have the right to shoot it. Do they want to keep that law is my question.
I mean, that's a,
I don't know.
I haven't seen that portion of the law yet.
I think, I don't
trust
know.
Me, when I was a constable, I got all the dogs registered that needed to be registered, and I went through all the laws because people gave me a bunch of crap about it. Trust me, I want to know if they're going to keep that law or eliminate that law. That's all I'm asking. Simple.
I'll make note on there is one section on vicious dogs, section 7 of
okay.
The sample one, and also on the current one. And I will pose that question about personal protection and where.
Vicious dog means a dog that attacks any person or causes any person to reasonably fear attack or bodily injury from such animal, unless the person is trespassing on the property of the owner of the animal.
That's in our current one.
That's in the current one.
Is that changing?
That's in state or your?
That's ours.
That's in our ordinance.
That was passed in 2005.
If we adopted a new ordinance, the new ordinance that I'm looking at anyway doesn't necessarily say that I see anything about trespassing.
And in the model ordinance, potentially vicious dogs, when a dog without provocation while off the premises of its owner or a keeper has kicked the person.
Okay.
So if it's on its own property, you are technically trespassing.
Yeah, you shouldn't be on their property.
Right.
Right.
For starters.
Any other thoughts from our audience?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go Renee first and then Beth.
Well, I was just wondering if you guys would think it'd be any value in having a powwow with Janine Menon, the dog officer, and the constables, in terms of, working out a process. So that way, with the ordinance, you also have a process that you can go to these holdouts with and say, this is going to be expensive if you don't comply.
I think we likely have a process that...
The process is there, but if they're not licensed, they can be impounded.
But I think part of this problem, to answer the second part of your question, is
finding somebody to enforce it.
We can't, well, that, and despite multiple attempts to talk to these people and send them notifications, it's being ignored. So, my comments last week or last meeting about this was, do we want to be in the position of taking someone's dog or destroying their dog because they didn't pay their fine?
You wouldn't be, because impounded animals shall be leased to the owner after payment of all penalties and impoundment fees.
Correct.
But it's deemed.
So that would be up to them.
There is the stipulation, though, that they could be, and I think our legal counsel said he could only think of one time where that's happened. So certainly a horrible thought, not likely to ever happen. But the fact that we have people that routinely do this and ignore notifications about it is a safety concern for the town. So we have no control where we know if they're back.
If their dog bites me, they're liable, correct?
Not.
If they're not shotted, right, with whatever it is, that gives soft rabies. Does that make them culpable and suable? If their dog bites you, you've got rabies, you got problems.
You don't know.
You're going to have tests without even knowing. And evidently, it's not happy testing, I guess, or not happy
treatment.
That's what I gather. I don't know.
Looks like at least in the sample one, there is a stipulation about. If the dog is a rabies suspect, and there's a Vermont statute noted in there that handles that.
Subchapter 5, Title 20 of Chapter 21.
So I guess
look into that.
My general take on this is some minor language changes and thinking about penalties.
Mm-hmm.
So when you want to amend your ordinance, you go through the same process, I believe, of adopting an ordinance.
So would the board be interested in taking some public written comment on this and bringing it up for discussion at a further meeting? And
That sounds good.
Maybe if you have any concept of which committee is working
on it. I will find that out and get it to you.
It would seem like it would be prudent to wait to see if the state is going to do anything before, in particular if we know that something might be talked about before we acted, to make sure anything we did was in alignment. I don't think there's any immediate pressing need of wild, rabid animals running our town and chasing people down Route 12A. So I guess we would hope if we know any of the people who haven't paid their...
But these are Route 12, so they may be running down that road.
John, you had a question.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry, yes. Yes.
Okay, this is kind of halfway related. So I believe Roxbury, you have to have your dog on a leash when you're like on a public road.
That's what it says.
Okay, so I've definitely had multiple instances where that has not been the case.
Mm-hmm.
And when telling an individual, like, please, you know, leash your dog, it's like a public way, please leash your dog, I was completely ignored, and I had like children with me. So that was really frightening. And scary, and just a horrible experience. And I called the town, kind of like, whoa, what do I do? I don't call 911 because that seems overkill.
That's the place to call.
That's the place to call.
Yep.
Now we'll refer you to
the. Confront the person. You know what possessed you to just not say anything and talk to the selectman or something else? You had to confront the guy.
It was a woman, and I just like reasoned with her, like, would you please leash your dog, because that's what you're supposed to do. Just like a conversation, kind of like, hey, you know, in case you didn't know, this is a public road.
You didn't realize it would become confrontational? You start to tell somebody what to do, it's going to become confrontational.
Guys, she has a right to voice her opinion.
Yeah, I'm not saying she doesn't.
But we do not want... We do not want people confronting each other in these meetings. It's not productive.
Is that what I was doing?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay. No. And that would go towards her talking to you as well. So This isn't a public discussion situation. It's an opportunity for you guys to comment on things.
Right.
So
I guess my comment would be, I wish there was a process to go through when you're walking on a public road in the city of Roxbury, in the town of Roxbury, and you're confronted with this issue. That, oh, like, is there a process to go through, like a select board person to talk to, and then maybe like a constable to contact this person? Some kind of process so that, you know, this person understands that this is kind of the rule and you're supposed to kind of follow it because it's there for a reason. So I guess that's my related issue to the dog.
Because they repeatedly ignored the ordinance and were in violation of it repeatedly. It may have been someone who was
they should.
Do you think that people pay attention to the law? All of them. They do what they want to do.
I know,
John.
I know.
The animal control officer should be contacted when issues like this take place.
Right, and if you call 911, they could contact the animal control officer.
Yep. So I think that's the procedure: is the animal control officer. If you can't reach them, you can call 911, who will then try to reach them, and or making. The town clerk, because she's usually the person that's available, notified, and she will bring that to the attention of the appropriate people as well.
Okay.
And
okay.
Do you have a copy of the ordinance? Because normally I would send a copy, not here, but a copy of the ordinance to the person who's violating the law.
I don't know if I can, like, just hand them the ordinance.
No, I would.
You would?
I would mail.
Oh, cool.
You have Ben and Andre.
Yep. Okay.
Super quick question. It sounds like you said you've mailed out for repeat habitual offenders who haven't purchased licenses. You've mailed out repeated notifications. Is that correct? Would it help, has this been done, to mail out a notification to habitual offenders preceding the rabies clinic, directly before that, rather than...
Well,
Right. I mean, as perhaps creating more incentive, these are the penalties if you don't go to the rabies clinic, which will allow you to register your dog. And therefore, I'm just wondering if that would make a difference.
I could send a copy of the flyer to the ones left with a note asking them.
Andre?
I was just going to ask, is the phone number for the animal, who is the animal control officer?
Janine Mannanen.
Is her phone number on the website?
No, but I can get it to anybody that needs it.
Okay.
And she is in the phone book.
Okay. What, how do you spell her last name?
Mannanen.
Mannanen, just like it sounds, yeah.
So, I think...
John?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Just real quick. Yes. Would the draft ordinance be posted on the web so we could see it?
I think it was part of the package.
Well, there is no draft.
He's asking about the one that Jim provided us. Is that in our packet? That was on the web?
It's not on the web. Okay. It's a legal that just got submitted.
We can make that, right?
I mean, it's not the ordinance that we're necessarily looking for. We want to tweak
it's
it.
Just a suggestion.
Okay. Yeah, it's
but
so
once
it's,
you get it to a draft state, you'll post it out there.
For yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'd have to go through the same process as other ordinance.
Okay, that's great.
It seems to me just on ours, we do have a running at large definition that a little unclear on the leash situation. This one, yes, but anyways, it says it's on a leash, but also that although it sort of absolves it if it's clear under the verbal and nonverbal control of the owner.
That's like not a thing. That's literally not a thing.
I would beg to differ. And so the legal definitions of running at large. So, so the this one, which was prepared by the lawyer, mentions that as well. But clearly what we want to make sure is that we have clear, defined rules so that people know what they can do and what they can't do. So why don't we... do you guys have any suggestions on how you want to...
Yeah, well, let's get some more
information
and put it together.
Okay.
I'll get them stuff to
do. I think, do we know when the state is looking at it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just saw a thing in the legislature where they are.
They may or may not deal with it.
It may not come out of committee. You never know.
Okay. All right. Why don't we table this until we get a better idea of when the state may or may not do anything?
That's good.
All right, new business. Mike, we apologize profusely for last meeting and not getting this on there by mistake. And we would like to give you the floor to explain the memorandum of understanding.
Did you get a chance to read through it?
As per your description, it's basically just...
an update as to where they're at. As with any state thing, it's moving very slowly.
No.
Do you have anything else to add, Don?
And what this is asking is us just a memorandum of understanding on the progress of the... It's central... Do you want to just give a quick...
And what was set forward before as far as... the presentation and how it's going to proceed as far as the financing and all of that.
For the Capital Fire.
Right.
Basically, that was prompted by the Public Safety Commissioner wanting a more legal, I guess you'd say, document to support
each town commitment.
Yeah, the commitment of each town.
Are they feeling like they're running into roadblocks without that, or is it just part of the procedure?
Just the procedure.
Yeah. assume it does, if it's a capital fire representative of the authority to spend tax dollars without the board's approval.
Well, that's a second part. A second part would be, as I've mentioned in the past, members of Capital Fire have been, from different communities, have been called on because they're voting on something that commits money for their community. So what they're requesting is that the board of each town that's part of Capital Fire determine who their representative would be. And I think in most all cases, it's the chief. And they need a backup person. And I think Mike and I have discussed I would be the backup person.
So is it relinquishing the nitty-gritty to the delegates, and the board would approve the assessment each year?
No, they approve the assessment, and then you're required to pay it. Non-payment of dues and assessments can constitute a violation of these bylaws. And this is prior. They're supposed to communicate to the department in writing the amount of its dues and assessment for the ensuing year prior to the time and warning for annual meetings. So that kind of takes it out of everybody's hands. Okay. You just have to pay their fees.
Is that on a yearly basis?
Well, they gave us, a 10-year plan,
right.
Which should be pretty much set, right?
It is. That is the plan. Yeah.
Right.
It's probably less money now. The original plan was $3.2
million.
Yeah. I think currently, because there's so many other communities involved with the state police basically backing away from dispatch for a significant number of communities in the state. So there's other communities looking for grant money. So the grant monies, I believe, have been reduced to $2.42 million, I think, or is that the correct number, in the short term.
Which town pays us?
Well, so it would, instead of $3 million, basically what we're looking at is a 10-year plan to replenish that, so that we don't have to ever go back to the state, is the governor's request.
So it's less than what he's originally
saying. We believe so, yeah.
Well, no.
I think Roxbury's original number was
that,
like $900 a year.
I think we already signed on to that 10-year plan.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, Dave, is the bylaws are new to the table?
Well, signing on to it, they've always come to, like I said, just allows them to spend money without approval or authorization.
And that last sentence sort of
says
you have to do it. Or it says you're in violation. Is there anything in there that says what happens to violators? Violation of bylaws, Article 11. May be removed from membership of the system for violation of bylaws. A member violating these bylaws shall be removed only after a hearing before the board of directors and by the vote of the delegates.
Basically, you'd be out of the mutual aid system.
Yeah. So hypothetical is here, in hyperbole, the delegates say,
yes.
No longer 900, it's 9,000, and you better pay the butt. I'm not saying that this would happen. You better pay it or you're in violation. We say no, or we don't pay it, in which case we're in violation, and then we would go to
Article 12.
Article 12, where we would not be immediately removed, but we'd have to go to a hearing in front of the board of directors and the vote of the delegates. So that would be our recourse if we didn't like that.
Okay. You try to go for cheaper funding or cheaper dues? That would be
I don't
one.
Think there is any. It's just the point of it.
Yeah. Make sure that we know what we're signing on to.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I would.
And obviously, I'm going to try my best to keep you guys in a little bit much
right.
as I can. And
yeah.
Because it's also.
I would move to have the town of Roxbury sign the memorandum of understanding for the Capital Fire Mutual Aid.
I second. yeah, I'll leave it at that. I second.
Okay. Any other questions?
And you guys did catch that I would be the delegate, Don would be the alternate.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Pass that 300. We will sign that and get it to you. So you can do my copy or do you have a specific copy?
They're all the same.
Okay.
But I noticed only two places for signatures. Is it a little weird?
I could also get you a copy.
Well,
just
I can get you another one.
Okay.
It was just looked a little weird, that's all.
Okay, next on our agenda is a review and approval and discussion about the RFQ for wastewater study. Town needs to do to potentially qualify for those monies. I worked with the person at the appropriate state agency, which is slipping my mind right now with the exact position he was. He's basically in charge of financing for all these.
And who does he work for?
The
what division?
I can look it up. While we're discussing it, I'll look it up. He's the guy who manages all of the disbursements of this, who I've been speaking to since the fall. He's guided me through this. Once that process is started, the state, and I believe it's Environmental Conservation and or Agency of Natural Resources, they will assign us a babysitter, for lack of a better term, who basically just holds our hand through the process and walks us through the whole application.
So this is for a feasibility study or for design and construction?
It starts with the feasibility study. So it's a multi-phase process and a multi-phase dispersion of funds, where the first stage is the RFQ is to solicit requests for qualifications for engineering firms who do this type of work, who will come in and study the needs in our town for both wastewater and if we ask for...
That would be a scoping study, and it would have specifics on it, because most state and federal funding would eliminate some of this wording. If the monitoring inspection of construction activities can't be done by the design engineer.
So this came straight from them as their model. So
and
I can't speak.
Like I said,
to
most
that.
State and federal funding takes that out of the equation. And so is this a loan or a grant that we're looking at?
It is a forgivable loan is how they...
If it is constructed.
And to pay for the study. So the first phase of this is to get the study, and at the end of the study phase, it is, it goes out for, they manage, if I recall correctly, they manage the RFPs for the construction, so you end up with all of that work at the end of the study. So this is just for the study to go through.
Right, I think it should be worded that way, as just for a feasibility study.
Okay.
Is it going to do anything with the existing system?
Which system?
The existing drain system that nobody wants to mess with.
Oh.
That the state put in.
It has nothing to do with that. If you have to.
What do you mean? It's wastewater?
No, no, that's stormwater.
Okay.
So if I'm hearing that right, this is the initial
it's only that one page, initial.
Okay. The waste. We're not paying for the initial process to decide if we're feasible for the whole study. It's not until we sign on and say yes, then it's a forgivable.
Well, I don't know that, but it doesn't say that.
We don't need to
apply for funding yet.
Yeah. We don't need to do anything. All this is doing is putting it out there and solicitation for their qualifications. So they would then come to us and say, well, we'll do this for this amount of money. And at that point, the state gets involved and starts guiding us through that process in terms of basically assigning us a permit specialist to make sure everything. Here's the deal. So the state has a ton of money right now that was given to them by the ARPA program, specifically been earmarked by the governor for these type of projects right now, and it's a one-time thing and it's never coming back. So this fellow Michael has advised us that if you're going to do it, and I explained to him our town situation, now would be the time to do that because you'll never see this type of money again. So it's our town's opportunity to potentially get both the study and all or most of the construction costs covered by these funds. So
to do what? To do what?
To create a community wastewater system.
Sewer plant?
Nope. Not a sewer plant. In smaller communities, what they do is they create community septic systems, for lack of a better definition.
Yeah. How much money?
Actually, not that much when you consider what it does. So,
yeah, right.
There's a town, Warren's doing one. Ripton?
They got the money.
Somewhere over in the Champlain Valley. And theirs is under $1 million for that. And his...
So you want to build a town garage too? How many million you want to spend?
Let me finish, Dave. I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
So, and it's good because everyone else in the audience can gain this information. These projects can be very expensive. It just depends on the scope and the scale, and they're nothing like building a sewage treatment plant. So,
where are you gonna get the land for starters?
So that is part of the study, is to study what the needs are. And the best locations for that based on the soil studies, and the engineers go through and do that. That's what this initial RFQ is for, is get the appropriate engineers in to study the soils and topography, the number of buildings that need to hook onto it, how that would all happen, and ultimately that is the end result of that is a plan that can be put out to bid.
Would it be forced to hook onto it?
I think that's all part of the study and what ends up happening, because part of this would be for them to study if a municipal water source was necessary. And in my conversations with a previous person who is more in tune with the nuts and bolts of this, they said that oftentimes, particularly in smaller communities, if the wastewater issues are dealt with, there's no need to create a municipal water source because the groundwater is uncontaminated and cleaner. So that's all up for the engineers to study and decide and recommend to us as to what's needed here and what's not. But ultimately, the wastewater, and this is not system that is even being considered as like a town-wide thing. It's mostly to do with what's going on right here in on 12A.
Yeah, but everybody in the town's gonna pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Potentially, potentially not.
I love that, potentially. What an answer.
Well, it's the truth. It could potentially have a bond involved, and it could potentially be paid completely by grant money. And we'd be silly folks to give up free money to build something that creates value and safety in our town. Yes, Tom?
Yeah, it's ongoing maintenance.
In other instances, I know that when a public system was put in like that, the individual hookups weren't part of the grant.
In this
particular case, you'll have a system, but nobody can afford to hook to it if it isn't covered by the grant. I mean, it's usually fairly expensive. And in many cases, the plumbing in the plumbing in a residence goes out in the wrong direction. You've got to replumb the house
mm-hmm.
in order to get it to hook up. So, I mean, is all that included in the grant?
So this, what we're talking about right now, this RFQ is specifically to do the study.
Right,
I understand that, but
that there's a whole process here of
mm-hmm.
the sequence of events, and I'm concerned that, you put this grand system in here, and then nobody could hook to it. You couldn't afford it.
That's making a lot of assumptions.
Well, I'm just saying, does the grant money...
I don't know, is the answer.
...include that? Oh, okay.
It's a reason...
So
it's a great question and worth finding out.
And we certainly wouldn't willy-nilly run into building $1 million or $700,000 system without understanding all of the implications leading into it. It does no good to put that in and not have anyone on it. The whole idea is to clean up the aquifer and the wastewater treatment on Route 12A. It's one of the reasons our Roxbury store can't have a bathroom, can't serve food, why we can't have a restaurant in town, why we can't do anything in town except what currently exists here in town. Because we don't have wastewater disposal.
Sure.
It
sure.
might make it appealing
I'm just saying
to people who want to build or do anything with it.
It's more complicated than...
But so you're primarily just making sure that there's free money out there and we can access it. We're taking all the appropriate steps to find out whether we can. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Thank you.
And our window is closing on that. So we want to make sure that we hop on this and get these proposals.
Is it not one of your thoughts to put a coffee bar or a restaurant in the church?
It was.
You would need a sewer for that?
It was in the original concept.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck having people come to it. All this stuff has been thought about years before you got here. That's what you don't get. And it ain't gonna work.
To
it's too small a freaking town.
You know, I think looking into the funding and looking into the study to see if it's feasible at all makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So I'm not sure.
I'm not knocking
yeah.
the study.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Then anything
don't
else,
expect
that,
to get,
then
anything
anything else that you're discussing is not important at this moment.
To you, maybe.
No, it's just not tied into what we're talking about.
Tell me something's unimportant. The hell do you think you are?
Dave, my life experience shows me that most things in life that are worth things are hard to do.
Yeah.
And if it's easy to say no, it's easy to say no. So what we're finding out right now is whether or not this is something that we say yes to or no to. And without the information that professional engineers tell us what we can and can't do and how much money we'll have to pay for it, we're just guessing in the dark whether it's going to be a good idea or not. Whether we're going to have a coffee bar or not, whether we're not going to have a restaurant in town, whether we're going to have food service at the country store when Randy decides to eventually retire someday and someone else takes it on. All those type of things are part of the bigger decision here. So we're trying to find out what options are available for our town. And if someone's going to pay for this and we can get someone else to pay for it, that's great. If it helps us. If it doesn't help us, then we decide that as a group.
Can I just make
yes.
a simple suggestion?
Sure.
Because of what we had tonight with the speaker that came in to discuss, you know, that all the stuff that was going on earlier, is it possible when this becomes more of a reality to have the gentleman Mike or somebody within the state level to come and talk to us about it?
There would be public input and hearings involved in it.
Including the people above that would come in and
The engineering firms usually run the public meetings.
Perfect.
Similar to the sidewalk.
What?
Similar to the sidewalk.
Right.
Right.
I am not comfortable with this wording and not knowing the funding source and whether it's a loan grant and how it works.
Okay.
When do we need to know by, John?
There's no deadline right now. But
oh, okay. You made it sound very
good. There's a finite amount of money and they're giving it out. So
yeah.
We want to.
Yeah, because if it's for a feasibility, I think it should be for a scoping study or feasibility study and word it that way and not have design and construction in it.
Okay. Can you, could you note that and email it to me and I'll forward it on?
Yeah.
Or send it to Tammy. She'll send it to me and we'll send it on to them and get their feedback on how to. I think we need to lean on them heavily because he was very clear to me that it is their 100% intention to help get these projects built. So they're not sort of...
And I gotta say, in the past 10 years, state and federal funding requires separate entities for construction, inspection, and monitoring compared to design.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like I said, I'm not comfortable with that word.
Okay. So just detail that, and then we can put this back on with revisions at our next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pops in the chicken coop, Dave.
Okay. Are you guys comfortable with that in terms of moving?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, okay. Tax map renewal. Oh, before we do that, so that we don't forget, do you have any suggestions on that? A list of the 3 or 4 engineering firms that have participated in this program in the past, and then they were required. We also post this publicly.
Yeah.
Do you have a works in progress?
Works in progress
is the only place we should post it publicly?
It's as close as you can get. Yeah, there is another one. I'd have to look it up, and I could probably get you a list of 6 engineering firms right off that do scoping studies.
Okay. I think that is the other piece of this, is that we need to decide where to post it and when we decide to post it, if we do. Okay. Next, 9C, tax map renewal contract.
It's our annual renewal.
We've been using the same company for years.
Well, this one we've only been using for about 3 years.
Yeah, but that's because they bought the last one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And how big an increase do they have?
I think $300.
Compared to anything else?
I think the last one was $1,200. This one's $15. And they don't do property record cards. They only create the tax maps.
Because they don't put the buildings on it.
Correct. And the company is Cartographics.
So this is something we need to do every year.
Mm-hmm.
Are we happy with what they've done in the past?
Yeah.
Given the cost, the dramatic cost of increase and everything else, $300 doesn't seem like all that much, actually.
The listers did not have any issues with the maps.
Okay. We have a motion?
Yeah. I move to approve the tax map maintenance contract with Cartographic Associates.
A second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Roxbury Country Store liquor and tobacco license renewal.
Now it's done through the state. It doesn't say much. It doesn't say much.
Between the sign of tax map renewal.
He supplied his necessary information for the tobacco and the liquor license to the state. Then the state sends me the info, and we have to process it online. So looking at these sheets, you can glance at them, but they really don't say much.
Okay.
There's no violations on them. He submitted the necessary fee to the town.
I motion to.
The select board is a local liquor control agency.
I mean, I guess before I do that, is there any objection? I mean, is there any reason we wouldn't approve a liquor license for?
Not that I don't know.
Okay.
No.
I motion to approve.
Can I get a liquor license for my house across from the school?
Probably.
Turn it into a bar. What do you think?
Hey, we'll get you a public restroom there, Dave.
I don't qualify like you don't qualify for the sewer for a bar. Kidding me? Besides, I hate him. I wouldn't make one. My father used to do that.
We need a second.
Oh, no second.
All right. Motion is to approve the liquor and tobacco licenses of the store.
You
have a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. 200. And the Microsoft renewal, 365 renewal.
It's the annual renewal. It did go up $1 per entity. We have five.
Yeah, is there any signing on here?
No.
Okay.
It's all online now.
It went up $1?
Per, so $6 each.
From your perspective as the person who uses this on a daily basis, is there any reason not to?
No.
Okay. I motion to approve the Microsoft 365 renewal.
Did you move to accept that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have a second.
Any other discussion on it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
200. Do we have any other business for the board? Any need for an executive session? Okay. And we will adjourn at 8:35. Thank you.